Nanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada
Ki Jai.
ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Mahatagoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki
Jai.
Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki
Jai.
Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki
Jai.
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyam Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki
Jai.
Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Jura Dham Ki Jai. Namajit Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki
Jai.
Gangamai Jumuna Devi Ki
Jai,
Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki
Jai,
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki
Jai,
Gaur Premananda, all glorious to the assembled, all glorious to the assembled, all glorious to the assembled, all glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glorious to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Naya Krishna Prasad 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 Gauravani Pachani Vasesa Sinyavadi Pasta Janis Ande Ham Shri Guru Shri Jabra Kamam Shri Guru and Vaishnava Struck Shri Rupam Sahaja Tam Sahagana Ragana Tam Gitam Sam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvaitam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ragana Shri Krishna Kamam Vajkapa Chibasaki Basandhya Vatapti Jam Pavanevya Vashmi Bhinavaro. So it's June 16th, 2015 in Perth, Australia, and just appearing today at Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gadadhar Pandit. So I thought first we could meditate a little bit on the song that we regularly sing, Jai Radha Madhava, which Srila Prabhupada specifically chose this song to sing in front, in right before all of his classes, and he said it represents the whole spiritual world. So Jai Radha Madhava, all victory to Radha and Madhava. They need victory because there's so many impediments, right? We were just at the gallery yesterday, and there's one diorama of Krishna pretending to be Abhimanyu, you know, and Jatila and Kutila are sending the real Abhimanyu away. So there's this impediment. You know, in the spiritual world, things are not boring. I remember when I was in a new student in university, so I was in an English class, we had to write a drama, and my professor said to me, this drama is boring because there's no problem. You have to have a conflict. The basic conflicts are one person against another person, a person against themselves, a person against nature, but some kind of conflict. But in the spiritual world, how is there going to be any kind of conflict? It's not possible. Because everyone has Krishna at the center. Our conflicts in this world are because we each have ourself at the center. Yes? You know, I'm looking out for my interest, you're looking out for your interest. And we make some show of unity. But even in the while we're making the show of unity, we're thinking, what's in it for me? But that doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Everyone there is thinking, what's in it for Krishna? What's in it for Krishna? Everybody is completely satisfied. So how can there be any conflict? Prabhupada talks about you throw a stone in different places and the circles collide, but if you throw all your stones in one place, you get concentric circles. But yet we see there is conflict. And Radharani has this so-called husband and her mother-in-law and her sister-in-law, and then the relationship is clandestine, it's secret, it's violating the moral codes. And this is also absurd because there's no need of moral codes in the spiritual world. Moral codes are needed for people who don't naturally do the right thing, who don't just spontaneously do the right thing. They need to have some kind of rule. Well, in this situation you act like this situation you act like this. But everyone there spontaneously does the right thing. And the moral codes come from Krishna. Dharma to Sakshat Bhagavad Pranita. He is the source of all of the Dharma. He destroys a Dharma. Yada yada hi dharma shakranya bhavati bharata bhutanama dharma shatadatmanam shudhanam. He destroys a Dharma. So how is it that his relationship with Radha is opposed to moral codes? That was interesting also at the museum yesterday. There's a lot of exhibits about Radha and Krishna. Like this one with Abhimanyu, they said, well, you know, at first we tried actually telling the story, but it didn't work very well. You know, the visitors would say, oh, your god is an adulterer? And then Virajan Prabhu said, no, everyone else is the adulterer, everyone else is stealing Krishna's wives. But so why is there this kind of concept in the spiritual world? Right. That there's some opposition. Because without some opposition, there's not as much flavor. Then there's no story. And Krishna's always engaged in stories. Even among the cowherd boys, they're fighting, right? Somebody's winning. And the mothers are saying, come home now. And the boys don't want to. So there's also some conflict. And there's some sense among everyone in Vrindavan that maybe Krishna really belongs to Mathura. This idea of other, of this Parakiya Rasa, is actually pervades all of the rasas in Goloka, because everyone is thinking, maybe Krishna is really the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Maybe he really belongs to Mathura. Maybe he will leave. Maybe he is somebody else's. So everyone, the servants, the trees, the plants, they all have this anxiety. And with the gopis, it's also like they belong to somebody else. And this creates some spice and some interest. Nobody wants a boring life, so God also doesn't have a boring life. Therefore, Jaya Radha Madhava, let there be victory. Let them overcome all of their obstacles. And of course, there's so many different ways described, especially by the Goswamis, as to how Radha Krishna overcome their obstacles. Sometimes Radharani dresses like Subal. Sometimes Krishna dresses like a girl. Right? They make some excuse. We're going to do the sun worship. We're going to do this. And they make some excuse to overcome their obstacles. Then there's also obstacles that they themselves create. And this is explained very nicely by Rupa Goswami, especially in Ujjwala Nilamani. And it's also explained very nicely in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Although not in as much detail, and the conversation between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami. So you can find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining all the different kinds of meeting and all the different kinds of separation. And some of the separation is caused by geographical distance. Krishna goes to Mathura or Krishna goes to the forest. And some is caused by anger. And then he said there's anger with cause and there's anger without cause. So anger with cause, you know, some gopi sees Krishna with another gopi, and she has anger with cause. And says Krishna doesn't have anger with cause toward the gopis. Sometimes a little bit. He says, why are you so late? You know, and she said, oh, all of a sudden the full moon came out. I had to go home and put on white clothes. So there's some, and then there's anger without cause. Does somehow, you know, Radha Krishna become angry with each other without any reason? And whoever smiles first loses, isn't there? And so there's therefore victory. Therefore one wants victory. Of course, it's interesting that sometimes Radharani's friends, they actually keep Krishna from going to Radharani. Although you think they want victory in Jaya Radha Madhava. So why are they preventing? Again, for some enjoyment. And Krishna likes this. Because for Krishna, everything he wants, Satya Sankalpa, all of his desires are instantly fulfilled. Right? I was just reading in Gopal Champu how Krishna goes to the abode of Yamaraj to get the son of his Gurukul teacher, Sandipani Muni. And Yamaraj says to him, you didn't have to come here. He said, just by your desire, this boy could again get his body back and come. All you had to do was desire. You didn't have to journey to my abode and ask me to reconstitute his body. He said, you come here then, therefore, just to favor me. So Krishna doesn't really have to flatter Lalita. He doesn't have to put on a disguise. He doesn't have to do any of these things. But because it's fun. It's playful. Krishna is very young and he's very playful. And therefore, the devotees are saying, Jaya Radha Madhava. Let there be victory for Radha Madhava. Of course, there's always victory for Radha Madhava. But they're not sure how they're going to do it. Like people go, you know, I remember when I was a little girl, I used to watch Superman on TV. So you knew every week Superman was going to win. That was for sure, because the show was going to be on next week. They weren't going to kill their hero. But you didn't know how he was going to win, and he'd always get in some difficult situation. And that was what was exciting. You know, how is he going to win? So Krishna's Radha and Krishna, they're always going to be victorious. But how are they going to be victorious? What's going to be the means? What's going to be the detail? And the devotees become absorbed in these pastimes. And of course, when Krishna and the devotees are absorbed in these pastimes, it's not exactly that they're thinking, oh, of course everything's going to work out. They're fully absorbed. This is Yogamaya, and even Krishna puts himself under Yogamaya. It's said in the beginning of the Rasalila chapters that Krishna puts himself under Yogamaya, that he doesn't know how it's going to turn out. He's not sure what he's going to do. Like when the cowherd boys go into Agasura's mouth and Krishna's thinking, what do I do? When Brahma steals the boys and calves and Krishna's thinking, what do I do? When Shalva brings a false Vasudeva and Krishna's thinking, what do I do? Because that's fun, isn't it? Don't we sometimes like a puzzle to solve? Would life be fun if you just automatically knew everything all the time? Puzzle solving is fun, figuring things out. So Krishna likes to do that. So Kunja Bihari, and where is he enjoying with Radharani? In the Kunjas, in the gardens. So the rural is higher than the city. Yesterday I was talking to Jagatrini. I said, yes, well, I grew up in a fancy place in Manhattan in New York City. She said, yeah, but that was just an apartment, right? I said, yeah. She said, a big apartment, right? I said, yeah, very big. She said, but I grew up in a house on land. That's higher. And we were playing like that. And I said, okay, you win. So it's a fact, right? The wealthy people in the world, they have a country estate. Maybe they have a city place. Maybe they have a big home in the city. But they have a country estate with gardens, yes? Fountains and flowers and groves and gazebos. And so this is Krishna's ultimate abode. Of course, even in Dwarka and Mathura, there's so many parks and gardens. The palaces have yards. But still, in Vrindavan, it's just forest. And it says that Krishna prefers the Gunjaberry necklace to a necklace of diamonds. You know, just some berries that you pick. You've seen Gunja berries. Are they very beautiful?
Yes.
You think so?
Oh, not Gunja berries.
Just Gunja berries. They're not so beautiful. Materially speaking, right? If some man, you know, he wants to give his wife a present on her anniversary, and he just gives her, you know, some Gunja berries. Now, what is this? Where's the diamonds? Of course, nowadays I heard the jewelry business is going down because everyone is buying electronics for the people they love instead of jewelry. But the point is that Krishna likes the rural things. He likes the forest flowers better than the cultivated flowers. And Vanamala, the garland of forest flowers, he likes the Gunja berries. He'd just like to, you know, stick a peacock feather in his hair, make a crown out of peacock feathers. And it says, although the boys are decorated with very valuable ornaments by their mothers, still they decorate themselves with leaves and flowers and feathers and mineral colors. So Kunja Bihari, Krishna likes to enjoy in the groves of Vrindavan. Right, Mother Yasoda, she says, do you really need to go to Vrindavan? I mean, you're the prince. We have so many servants. Somebody else can take out the cows. Why do you need to do this? You stay at home as a pampered prince. He says, no, I like going to the forest, Mother. I enjoy it. It's so much fun going to the forest. This is my pleasure. And Gopi Janabalava. So not only does Krishna have Radha, but he has so many gopis, unlimited numbers of gopis. I remember when I first read Prabhupada's Krishna book, and I'm reading about the spiritual world, and I'm thinking, but all the places are already taken. All the there's no place for me to go. He already has all his cowherd boys, all his gopis, all of his cows. But unlimited, Krishna has unlimited gopis, unlimited cowherd boys, unlimited cows, unlimited persons who act as his mother and father, unlimited servants. And Krishna relates with each of them. It said that he touches every plant, every creeper in Vrindavan every day. And when Krishna is dancing with the gopis or when he returns to Rasalila and they're putting down their cloth and he's sitting with them, each gopi is thinking, Krishna's only with me. Krishna's only with me. Each cowherd boy thinks, Krishna's only looking at me. And Sanatana Goswami says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, each cowherd boy thinks, I am Krishna's favorite. And he says, and actually he is. Each cowherd boy is Krishna's favorite. So when Krishna expands himself to be the child of every family in Vrindavan, of every cow in Vrindavan, everyone gets to have Krishna as their child. Because the other parents are thinking, you know, oh, Mother Yasoda, she's so lucky. Mother Rohini, she's so lucky. I wish I could serve Krishna like that. So they get to do that. They get to have that relationship with Krishna. Everyone. So Gopi Janabalava, Krishna is enjoying with so many gopis, not only Radharani. In fact, Krishna Das Kaviraj says that Radharani feels, I think it's 10 million times happy, more happiness when Krishna enjoys with the other gopis. And all the gopis are like that. They all feel many, many times more happiness. And imagine how much happiness they feel when they're with Krishna. It's unlimited. Now, unlimited times 100,000, you know, it's a little. But they're already feeling unlimited happiness. But when Krishna's enjoying with someone else, they feel even happier. Because that's the nature of happiness in the spiritual world. The nature of happiness in the spiritual world is my happiness, is others' happiness. The nature of envy is my happiness is your unhappiness. You know, I'm okay if I'm a little bit higher class, if I'm at least in Rajagun, I'm okay if you have some happiness, as long as it's less than mine. You know, if one's in Tamagun, one doesn't want anyone else to be happy. Only themselves. Rajagun, you know, you're okay. Especially if the people who are being happy are related to you in some way. And then it's almost like your happiness. You know, your son wins the award, it's like you've won the award. The man who never finishes his education, never finishes secondary school, he works so his son graduates from university, and then he's very happy because he feels it's his accomplishment. Yes? But we see even sometimes parents are envious of their own children. Happens. Husband and wife are envious of each other. I knew one marriage, a devotee marriage, that failed because of this. So both husband and wife were very expert preachers. And the husband said, I don't want my wife to be as good as me. I don't want her to be a partner. I want her to always be in my shadow. I don't want her to be a partner. I don't want her at my side. I want her at my back. And it was untenable. She said, well, then I can't breathe. You know, this is what I need to do. No, you can't. You know, any time that she had any kind of accomplishment in bhakti, he would become so disturbed. Even though he was also very accomplished. He was doing so much wonderful service. But he couldn't tolerate. I just couldn't tolerate that my wife is also doing some service. So sometimes you find this also between husband and wife, between parents and children. So materially, we feel happy when someone else suffers. This is one reason why the news is full of the sufferings of important persons. Why is it every day, I'm sure every day, in the newspaper, the magazines, on the internet, you'll find some story about some rich, famous, beautiful, right, talented person, and how they actually have some secret suffering or some public suffering. That's even better if it's a public suffering. You know, if they're found out to be addicted to drugs or something like that. They're found out to be a criminal and everybody's, yes, good. That person's not really so great after all. And it's a very nasty thing. It goes so far in this world that we take happiness when we're the cause of other suffering. When we can cause someone else, when we have the power to cause someone else to suffer, we become happy. And this can even extend, you know, you defeat another devotee in philosophical debate. Yes. My quote from Prabhupada triumphed over your quote from Prabhupada. I know the real Siddhanta and you don't. And now all the devotees see that you are a fool. Ah. And we take pleasure in that. I'm very happy now I've embarrassed this person, I've shamed this person. Or we become happy gossiping about somebody. Someone says, oh, so-and-so, they're a very nice devotee. Oh, really? No. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gives that example. You find out one of your childhood friends becomes a high court judge, and the people say, him? I knew him when he was a child. No way could he be a high court judge. He's not very smart. No, I saw him. He was sitting on the bench, and he was, you know, giving the judgments. Oh, he must be doing it for free. He must not be getting paid. And we take some pleasure in that. Someone says, oh, you know, so-and-so, they are a very wonderful devotee. They're doing this and, oh, yeah. That's, but did you know? Did you know? They're also doing this? Did you know? And then we feel very happy. Oh, now I have caused pain to somebody. Now I have put somebody else down. This is the whole nature of envy. Actually, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry to say this, but practically all of our enjoyment in the world is based on this, mixed with it to some extent. You know, we become happy at getting something because it's more than what others have. You know, in the Olympics, the people who get number two, they're very depressed. You know? Logically, it doesn't make sense, but they become, oh, why aren't I number one? But in the spiritual world, it's exactly the opposite. It's exactly the opposite. Everyone is happy at others' happiness. Now imagine if you're in a society where everyone is getting their happiness from everyone else's happiness. And that means everyone is doing everything they can to make everybody else happy. Would you have to take care of your own happiness? You'd never have to think about it, would you? If Krishna and an unlimited number of living entities were always meditating on how to make you unlimitedly happy, you could forget about your own happiness completely. And everyone's in that mood. So nobody thinks about their own happiness at all. It's just already there. So Gopi Dhanabhava. Giri Varadari. So Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. Of course, he likes to play on Govardhan Hill. There's the waterfalls and the caves. Of course, we go now to Govardhan Hill, we don't see these things. We see some boulders and some thorn trees and monkeys and dogs. And you don't see any waterfalls. I have a multimedia presentation on Govardhan Hill, and I was showing it on Govardhan Puja Day in Auckland many years ago. And one of the guests who was fairly new to Krishna consciousness said, oh, will I see it like that in India? I said, oh. But when Krishna was playing on Govardhan Hill when he was here, Govardhan Hill was full of waterfalls that were so loud that they drowned out the noises of the crickets. And many pools and jewels just on the surface, like here you do a lot of mining, yes? But you don't have to mine in Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill just puts the jewels right on the top of the ground. Even in Satyayuga it was like that. Nobody had to mine. The gold and the jewels were on top of the ground. The vegetables, fruits were just being produced without agriculture. So Govardhan Hill has these jewels on top of the ground and jeweled sitting places and all kinds of mineral colors for the cowherd boys and gopis to decorate themselves and caves to go when it's raining or it's too hot or it's too cold. So many play areas, like a perfect playground for the cowherd boys. Remember when we were children how we liked places to climb on? Yes? Playgrounds. Govardhan Hill is like that. And also provides many secret meeting places for Krishna and the gopis. Like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, that the deer hear the sound of Krishna's flute, so they go to Govardhan thinking he's there, and then they can't find him. Why can't they find him? He's hiding in some cave. And then Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. So what a wonderful story. How the cowherd men are there starting this big yajna for Indra. And Krishna stops it and instead has this grand festival for Govardhan, which is one of our happiest festivals of the year, right? We don't have to fast.
Yeah.
Only feasting. And Krishna says, you know, decorate yourselves, go around the hill. In Gopal Champu, Krishna, this is very nice. Gopal Champu, Krishna says to the residents of Vrindavan, you don't have to walk around the hill. You can go around in a cart. So it's authorized from Jiva Goswami. If you don't want to do your park run by foot, you can go in. So Krishna's asking everyone to circumambulate Govardhan Hill and offer all these mounds of food, and then Govardhan Hill himself shows that he's Krishna. Paridasa Varya. He's Krishna in the mood of being a servant, because being a servant of Krishna is actually more fun than being Krishna. You know, we're trying to give up being a servant to be Krishna, but Krishna, he likes to give up in the mood of Krishna to be the servant. As Lord Chaitanya, as Govardhan Hill. And Govardhan Hill is not only serving Krishna, he's serving all the devotees with his very body. I mean, we say in this world, oh, you know, they're walking all over me. It's very unpalatable. We don't want anyone to walk all over us. But Govardhan Hill, he's giving his body, and it's said he's very happy when Krishna and Balaram walk all over him. He's like, oh, so nice. And not only Krishna and Balaram, all the cows, the calves, all the cowherd boys, the gopis, and he's giving from his own body. Right? He's giving from his own body. In this world, only the mothers do that. The mothers grow the baby in their body and feed the baby from their body. sacrifice their own body for their child. Of course, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the mother, the father, the grandsire. So Govardhan, in this capacity, is acting like a mother, giving the fruits and roots and things from his own body for the devotees to eat, everything for the devotees from his own form. Yasoda Nandana. So how can Krishna be anybody's child? Aham Bija Pradapita. He's everybody's father. The religions of the world, they mostly pray to God as the father. But here Krishna is the son. And Krishna prefers, thank you, to be known as the son rather than the father. Of course, it's interesting. You could say that in tattva, Krishna is Mother Yasoda and Nandamarja's father. In tattva, he's everybody's father. But in rasa, he likes to be the son. Mother Yasoda's son. And Mother Yasoda is such an interesting mother. You know, materially, if there was that kind of devotion from mother to child, it would be suffocating. You'd say, Mom, you know, back off here. She's feeding him all day, you know. He just had a meal and she comes and takes some care before you go to bed. You may be hungry. Sanatana Goswami explains Krishna's going to the forest and Mother Yasoda's going, are you all right? You have this? Yes, Mother, I'm okay. You can go home. And then she comes again. But do you need this? Do you need this? Yes, Mother, I'm okay. And again and again and again and again and again. Mother Yasoda's coming. And any difficulty for her child, she just wants to die. She just faints. So this is the unbelievable amount of motherly love. And Krishna's enjoying this so much. You know, Krishna's the shelter of everyone. We talked on Sunday about how Krishna's the shelter. But he takes shelter of Mother Yasoda. You can see the paintings, you know, Mother Yasoda's hugging him, and his head is on her shoulder, and he's just leaning on her shoulder. Oh, she's my shelter. She's carrying him around. She's feeding him. One of the unique aspects of the Vatsalya Ras is that in the Vatsalya Ras, the devotees, they don't exactly take shelter of Krishna. They take shelter of Narayana. Isn't that fascinating? When Krishna has some trouble, Nandamarja is saying, oh, please, Narayana, please save my son. Someone in Vatsalya Ras, when someone says to them, please take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they just think, oh, Narayana, I have to take shelter of Narayana. How can my child be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I mean, sometimes the gopis will say, you're not really the son of Mother Yasoda, you're really the Supreme Lord. But the mothers and fathers, they never think like that. They say, oh, maybe Krishna is some expansion of Narayana. Isn't that interesting? I mean, we say Krishna is true Bhagavan Swayam. He's the source. But if you're in Vatsalya Ras, you don't feel like that anymore. You're worshipping Narayana for the protection of Krishna. And you say, maybe Krishna is an expansion of Narayana. Maybe he's a demigod. And when there's some problem, you think of how to protect Krishna. Just like when Krishna appeared to Vasudeva and Devaki. So you think, right, there's this voice from the sky that the eighth child of your sister will kill you. And then Vasudeva Devaki, after the birth of their first child, they're in prison in chains. So usually you're in prison in chains, you're not going to have a baby every year. You know? But to facilitate Krishna's appearance, they were doing that, even though they knew their child was going to be killed. You know, you're in prison, you're in chains, your children are going to be murdered, and still they're producing a child out of service. And then you would think after all that, it would be pretty traumatic, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be traumatic? If you read about that happening to someone now, you know, husband and wife were in prison and they were in chains, and every time they had a baby, the baby was murdered right in front of them. Wouldn't that be kind of traumatic? Yes? And you would think then that as soon as Krishna appears, and they see he's Krishna, he appears with four hands and hair and ornaments, and there's the prophecy, you know, what would I say? I would say, oh, I'm so glad you're finally here. Can you please kill this Kamsa and get us out of here? Right? Isn't that what generally we would say? You know, you've come to kill Kamsa, let's do it. I mean, Krishna killed Putana when he was 3 months old. He could have killed Kamsa immediately as a newborn baby. But that's not what they say. Devaki says, oh, Kamsa's killed all your brothers, he'll kill you too. Especially he sees you looking like this, he'll for sure kill you. Which is contradictory, isn't it? If he sees that you're unkillable, he'll kill you, you know. This is her love. She said, please disguise yourself, make yourself look ordinary, and give us a place we can hide you. They never said, release us from prison. They never said that. Of course, they got released at that time. But they didn't say, release us from prison, kill Kamsa. They said, how can we serve you? So this is the mood of Vatsalya Ras. A very interesting mood. Prabhupada often talks about this. He says, everyone wants to become Krishna, you know, God's child, but we want to become God's father and God's mother and take care of him. So Yasodhanandana, Braja Jana Ranjana. So Braja Jana, Jana means people, all the people of Braja. Krishna is very kind to the people of Braja, but it can mean everyone in Braja. It means also the trees, the birds, they're all persons. It's not like in this world where the chair is not a person. Or, you know, the bird is a person, but it's not really displaying what we would consider personness so much. But all of the entities in Vraja, Krishna is very dear to them, as we said. He's touching each plant every day. And Krishna is very enchanted by Vraja. Many places in the 10th canto, it says Krishna looks at Vrindavan and he thinks, what a wonderful creation I've manifested. I mean, we do that, right? We create something, even if it's just, you know, some japatis. We create some japatis, or we create a painting, or we write something, or whatever we create, and we look at it and say, oh yes, very nice. So Krishna looks in his Raja and he says, oh, very nice. It's very dear. Jamuna Tira Vanachani. So Krishna very much likes water. In Dwarka, he's on the ocean. In Vrindavan, he's on the Yamuna. And then there's so many lakes and ponds all over Vrindavan. And Krishna likes this. Of course, the water is a person. The Yamuna is a manifestation of Vishakha Gopi. And she's always facilitating all of Krishna's pastimes. So Krishna likes to swim in the water. He swims in the water with his cowherd boys, with his gopis. And he also likes to walk on the bank of the Yamuna. We like this, yes? We like to go to a park where there's a river and you walk along the river and you hear the sound of the water and over the rocks and the sparkling of the sunlight on the river, the sparkling of the moonlight on the river. So Krishna likes to walk along the bank of the Yamuna, and there's a beautiful sand there. So this is one of his favorite places. So he really likes Govardhan, he really likes Radhakund, he really likes walking on the bank of the river. So when we sing this song, we can meditate on this vision Bhaktivinoda Thakur has of Vrindavan and enter into Vrindavan. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a very interesting person. So he was not born in a Vaishnava family, and he decided to dedicate himself to Krishna after thorough study, particularly of the Bhagavatam. And it's fascinating how Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings change over his life. You see that he's showing this progression of a devotee. He also did a lot of preaching. He was very interested in connecting with people of other religions, particularly the Christians and the Muslims in India. He had a very non-sectarian approach to spiritual life. At the same time, he wrote many books that were very deep in Krishna consciousness, like Jiva Dharma or Bhajan Rahasya. So he wrote books like Krishna Samhita, which were for the general public, and then he wrote books like Bhajana Rahasya, which are almost incomprehensible unless you're on a very high level of spiritual life. And at the same time, he was very responsible in the world. He was a judge, and he was able to do his cases very quickly and very well. He was very respected as a judge. He was very instrumental in Jagannath Puri in raising the standard of the worship there, and he would personally go door to door to collect the donations and say, oh, why have you come? You are the magistrate. You know, you are the high court judge. Why are you coming, begging to my door? And he saw himself like that as Jagannath's servant. And then he had a lot of children. Some accounts say 10, some say 13. And all of his children became first-class devotees. His first wife died when his oldest son was very young. He married again. And his second wife was also a Bhagavati. She was also a very great Vaishnavi. And of course we know that he prayed for a ray of Vishnu to continue his work. This is important, to have a succession plan. And he trained Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati in debate, in preaching, in the printing press, and so forth. And he left us so many books, I mean so many songs. In his Sharanagati song, he takes us through the six items of surrender. He takes us through the Shikshastika verses. He gives a whole song commentary on the Shikshastika verses. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote song commentaries and prose commentaries on many different verses, many different scriptures. He wrote a commentary on the Upadeshamrita, on two verses of the Upadeshamrita known as Bhaktiloka. He wrote both a song and a prose commentary on Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha. And so he was, he would write his own books. He wrote novels. Jiva Dharma is a novel. Prema Pradipa is a novel. So he wrote in a wide variety of genres. So he wrote books that were essays, like Krishna Samhita, Chaitanya Shikshamrita. He wrote books that were stories, fictional stories even. He wrote poetry and songs. He wrote commentary. And he did all this while having a job and managing his family. And Prabhupada said he must have been a very responsible husband and father, otherwise his children wouldn't have turned out so nicely. It wasn't just that, you know, he was doing all these other things and his wife and children felt neglected. So he had a very close relationship with his children and with his wife. And then at the end of his life, last 4 years of his life, he retired and he just did bhajan. You can go even now to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house across the Jalanki in Swarupganj, where he stayed. Bhaktisananda Sarasvati also has a room there. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's deities there are, anyone know what is his deities?
Gaur-Gadadhar.
So I was trying to find that, couldn't find it. But there's a nice song that Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, particularly about worshipping Gaur-Gadadhar. So this is where his heart was. Srila Prabhupada established mostly Gaur-Nitai, you know, or else the whole Panchatattva. I don't know, I think we have any ISKCON temple where Prabhupada established Gaur-Gadadhar. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur very much liked to worship Gaur-Gadadhar. So today is the disappearance day also of Gadadhar Pandit. So it's interesting, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also left this world the same day. And Gadadhar Pandit is the personification of the internal potency, although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the mood of Srimati Radharani. In order for him to experience that mood, he needs help from Radharani herself, because he's not Radha, he's Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in Radha's mood. So how will he experience Radha? She has to help him. So she comes as Gadadhar Pandit to help him. Also Swarupadamodara Ramananda Roy come to help as well. But it's interesting that Gadadhar Pandit, he takes the mood of a submissive gopi. Although he's helping Lord Chaitanya to get into Radharani's mood, and he's exhibiting a little different mood himself. He's exhibiting more mood like Rukmini in Dwarka, that he doesn't argue, you know, not like Jagadananda Pandit, who said, "I didn't bring you any oil," and smashes the pot on the stairs. You know, Gadadhar Pandit's not like that. And even there's a situation where Balabhacharya wanted to tell his Bhagavatam commentary to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya didn't want to hear it, and Balabhacharya kept insisting. You know people like that, right? They just keep pushing. So he kept pushing. And finally, when they listened, Swarupadamodara said, actually, everyone thought, "Oh, this is very nice." And Swarupadamodara Maharaji said, "Explain, what do you mean by this? What's your intentions?" By the way, that's always a good idea, to ask people what their intentions are instead of just guessing at their intentions. So he explained his intentions, and Swarupadamodara, "No, this is not good." And Balabhacharya, he would go to Lord Chaitanya, and he would say, "Oh, you have to hear my commentary because it's better than Srila Sridhar Swami." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Then I'm not going to touch your commentary." He said, "You should be serving the past acharyas, not trying to get higher than them." And Balabhacharya was so upset nobody would hear his Bhagavatam commentary, so he just went to Gadadhar Pandit's house, and because Gadadhar Pandit was very soft. Anyway, some older person comes to your house, you know, maybe in Australia you'll throw them out, but not in Jagannath Puri in that culture. And he just comes and sits down and starts reciting his Bhagavatam commentary. And Gadadhar Pandit's thinking, all the devotees will criticize me, which they did, for listening to this commentary that Lord Chaitanya doesn't want to listen to. But he couldn't do anything. He was stuck. He couldn't say, "Excuse me, sir, would you please leave my house?" And he was just praying, "You know, Lord Chaitanya, you know that this is against my will. You please protect me." But he got very much criticized by the other devotees. And later on, Lord Chaitanya said to him, "Why did you just tolerate this? Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you defend yourself?" And he said, "No, no." as your business, Lord. I'm not going to defend myself. You know my heart. So this is a very soft nature. There's a nice pastime in Navadvipa when Lord Chaitanya is there with Gadadhar Pandit when they were young. And Satyadevi's there. Lord Chaitanya says, where's Krishna? Where can I find Krishna? And like we might say to someone, well, Krishna's in your heart. He's right there. Right? We might say that. Someone says, where can I find Krishna? Oh, he's in your heart. So Gadadhar Pandit said, oh, he's in your heart. And so Lord Chaitanya started scratching his chest. You know that picture of Hanuman where he's opening his chest and Sita Ram? So Lord Chaitanya's like scratching his chest. And Satya is, you know, in so much anxiety. And then Gadadhar Pandit says, no, 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 Krishna's coming. He'll be at the door very soon. You don't have to do this. He's coming to the door. And then Lord Chaitanya calmed down. And Mother Satya said, you better stay with him all the time. You're the right one to take care of him. And Gadadhar Pandit took that very seriously, that he needed to be with Lord Chaitanya all the time. He moved to Jagannath Puri when Lord Chaitanya moved, and he took this vow of Kshetra Sannyas, that I will stay in this one place. But then what do you do when Lord Chaitanya starts to travel? You're supposed to stay with him all the time, and then he starts to travel, and you've taken this vow to stay in one place. So he said, Lord, take me with you. Lord Chaitanya, I can't take you with me. You have a vow to stay here. It's my business to uphold the vows of my devotees. No, no, no. Going with you is higher than my vow. Lord Chaitanya, no. So Gadadhar Pandit went kind of like in the back. So Lord Chaitanya wouldn't see him. You know, and get to a certain place. Oh, there's Gadadhar Pandit. He's come anyway. And at a certain point, Lord Chaitanya said, all right, you've come so far now. Your vow is definitely broken. Are you happy now? Now go home. This was a very nice exchange between Lord Chaitanya and Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit offers us entrance into the into the shelter of the internal energy. He loved to read the Bhagavatam. When he would read the Bhagavatam, though, he would cry so much. Not like these books, you know. If you cry on these books, the pages will get a little wrinkled, you know. But if you, the way they wrote was on leaves with regular ink. I don't know if anybody sees regular ink anymore. It's kind of like paint. So when he cried, the ink would wash off, and then you couldn't read the book anymore. He would cry so much that the copy became unreadable. There was one devotee who was it Narottamadas Thakur? Srinivasacharya, who was told to study Bhagavatam with Gadadhar Pandit, and he said he couldn't because Gadadhar Pandit's book was unreadable from all of the crying. Our entrance, we have, if we go to page 55, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, this is a nice song to offer actually to Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
What song is it?
Oe Vaishnava Thakura. It says, Oe Vaishnava Thakura, Doya Rastagara, E Dase Kamanakuri, Via Parachaya, Soda Heda Maya. I'm sorry, you're from Bengal? No? That's good. Anybody here from Bengal? You're from Bengal? I'm sorry that I'm completely... You're probably listening to me and just like cringing how I'm pronouncing your language. I'm sorry. Dia Panachaya Soda Hea Maya Tomara Charanadori. New York accent, Bengal. Jaya Bhega Dhamni Jaya Dosha Sori Jaya Guna Deha Dasha Jaya Satsanga Deha Ea Mani Bosiche Sangiras, Ekadia Mara Nai Pai Bala, Arinam Sankirtane, Tumi Kripa Kori, Shara Bindadiya, Deha Krishna Namadhani, Krishna Se Tomara Krishna Dite Bara, Tomara Sakati Ache, Amito Kangala, Krishna, Krishna Bole, Dai Tava Bachi Bachi. This is a very nice song. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song, but it's a nice song to sing to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You have Krishna. I don't have the strength myself to engage in the Sankirtane, but you have Krishna. If you take just a few minutes, any questions or discussions? Okay, thank you very much. Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. Oh, you have one? As soon as I want to end, then you say you have one. Yes.
I'm wondering if there's any significance of Gadadhar Pandit leaving and appearing on the Amavasya. Is it any significance for
that? I don't know. Sorry. Yes?
There is a significance that Krishna's born on the side of the waxing moon, so it's like a half moon.
Mm.
The Asami and the fourth of the. Oh, sorry, the waning moon, Krishna's born on the last Asami, the half moon, halfway between the full moon and the new moon. And then Radharani's born on a half moon as well. Waxing, so the two halves, the two different halves. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is born on the Palim, the full moon, because he takes Radharani's moon, so he takes the moon represents moon and emotions astrologically. So he takes Radharani's half, as Lord Chaitanya takes Radharani's mood. Then Radharani slept without a mood, without her original moon anyway, as Gaudapana, so Gaudapana's born on the new moon, because Krishna was taken.
Well, this is also new moon, he says, his disappearance.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Thank you.
It's one significance.
Anybody else?
Do you remember any pastime of Srila Prabhupada? Something?
Yeah, but it's not the right time. Anything on this topic? Yes.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Nitya Siddha? Or is he coming?
Well, it's interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur does not present himself as a Nitya Siddha. He presents himself as a sadhana siddha. Mm. And Srila Prabhupada tells us that he's a nitya siddha going through the motions of being a sadhana siddha. But he doesn't present himself as a nitya siddha. He presents himself as a sadhana siddha.
Because there's even, like, some people say that he used to eat meat or something like
that. Yeah, because he was born in a Shakta family. And he definitely shows a progression of somebody becoming convinced of the philosophy and taking up Krishna consciousness, and you see a progression in his writing of an increase in depth. You definitely see that. But we need that. We need to have some models of advancement by sadhana siddha. If all of our models are only showing us nitya siddha, we wouldn't know what to do to progress, right? We wouldn't have any template.
Yes. So those descriptions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur being some Manjari and Subhachan being some other Manjari and Prabhupada being something, are they bona fide or is it?
Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says he gives his own identity in his songs. He has his own songs where he reveals his own identity.
So he's a Nitya Siddha.
Well, Prabhuji, everybody has an identity. Even if you're a sadhana siddha, you're going to have an identity. And you have an eternal identity. So, however one becomes siddha, however one is siddha, one still has an identity. So, if you're sadhana siddha, you can still have you have the 11 aspects of identity: your name, your form, your place, etc. That's the whole point. That is, our original identity is supposed to awaken. So, the fact that somebody is reveals their identity is not an indication of how they became siddha. It's not that only nitya siddhas can reveal their identity. A sadhana siddha could also reveal their identity. I mean, and there's a whole discussion, did Prabhupada reveal his identity and what was it? And I am not going to discuss that. But, you know, definitely, very specifically, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Well, actually not that specific. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some indication. What is his name? What is his service? He doesn't give the name of his group leader. He just says that there's a gopi who says, you know, you can stay in my kunj and your maintenance is my responsibility. He doesn't say who that is. Is that Arun?
Yeah.
Are you not sure?
No. It's good as
far as it goes. Okay. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists the spiritual identity of everyone in his diksha line going back to Janakamand. That doesn't mean they were all nitya siddha devotees, but their spiritual name is listed, their eternal name is listed. Yes? Did you have a question?
Not exactly a question, but yeah, I have these verses. Because we are really talking about the protection, even the gopis would, you know, talk about protection about Krishna.
They would have mantras to protect Krishna.
Oh, this is the mantras that Madhya Yasoda and the older gopis say to protect Krishna.
Yes.
So my Ajna protect your legs, my Maniman protect your knees, Yajna your thighs, and you to the upper part of your waist. Do you meditate on that?
Yes, but I don't fully understand that. That's
you don't
why
fully
I was
understand
like,
it. Well, because the older gopis, they're thinking Krishna needs to be protected. That's their mood.
Yes.
So you're aspiring for that mood. Yes?
But the Adbhut Mandir, which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
That's also a whole controversy. I don't want to go there. I mean, it's also a big controversy because certain parts of the Gaudiya Math say, oh, it's this place, and everybody wants to claim, you know.
Yes. But right now, what we're building, is that
is our claim. It's not that everybody accepts that our claim is correct. Hmm. Other people have their own claims. I mean, I don't know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't talk to me about it and tell me which visionary was that he had. So, but I'm sure Bhaktivinoda is very happy seeing our TOVP Goya. Yes?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what did he reveal himself as? He said he
as a Kamala Manjari. He has a few songs like that.
And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said he wrote so many books like Jayavadharma and things like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, did he write also many books like that? Yeah?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't know of any. I mean, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati told a lot of... he created his own little fables. Mm-hmm. There was a compilation of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati stories, and they're not true stories. They're fable analogy stories. Mm-hmm. But I don't know of any case where he wrote a whole... metaphorical fable type book like that, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur did with two books. I mean, it could be, but I'm not aware of it. I'm only aware of those stories. Yes?
Manaji, connected with the pastime you were sharing about Gadadhar Pandit and Vallabhachari,
mm-hmm.
Just wondering, like, if you have any insight or authoritative understanding of Vallabhachari's position?
I don't know of any.
Okay.
I mean, it might be there, but I don't know of any. I mean, that's also very controversial. And Prabhupada didn't so much want us printing anything in Back to Godhead on the topic because he didn't want us to disturb the members of his Sampradaya. I mean, we know Vallabhacharya worships the Lord in the Vatsalya Ras. And he trains his followers to worship in the Vatsalya Ras. They see the Vatsalya Ras as the highest Ras.
He was a disciple of Manavendrapurya.
He took initiation from Gadadhar Pandit. He surrendered to Gadadhar. Gadadhar Pandit at a certain point accepted him. But you know, you can receive, you can only have one Diksha Guru for a particular mantra, but you can get Diksha from different people in different mantras. I don't know if I should throw that out there, but anyway, you can. And that's the system. Like Ramanujacharya had five different Diksha Gurus because they initiated him into different. You had Maya Devi who says to Haridas Thakur, Lord Shiva initiated me into chanting Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. You please initiate me into chanting Hari Krishna, Hari Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So he could have been initiated in different mantras by different persons. But I don't know. That's just an educated guess.
So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's children, they all are devotees?
All pure devotees, yeah. But even among them, there was a difference of opinion between Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and Lalit Prasad. And Prabhupada said it was a spiritual difference of opinion, but we shouldn't get involved because we would think it was material and we would find fault and we should just stay out of it. And we had some difficulty in the early days of ISKCON with people going to Lalit Prasad and taking instruction from him. And his instruction on the path of sadhana was somewhat different from Bhaktisiddhanta's, and it caused a big problem. Prabhupada told us to respect him, but not to go and hear from him, because he had a different path. It's just like if you enroll in one university, they may have different policies from another university. Both universities are teaching mathematics. Mathematics is just mathematics. There's no good mathematics and bad mathematics. But they may have a different school policy, a different way of teaching, different textbooks and so forth. And you can't go to one school and say, well, they teach it like that over there. Where you surrender as this is my teacher, this is my school, then you follow. So thank you very much. Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai. 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 Jai.